You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
You're on riverboat gambling trips.
You're gonna die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Wednesday, July 13th, 2022. Follow on Twitter at ChickenXDinner. DM's always open for you. And subscribe, smash the button, so you get this mother clucker once it goes live. We will talk to Eric Sherwood, the annoyed pit boss. Life on the casino floor, dealing with losing players, an insane hot streak at the craps table, and Eric shares his favorite NFL bets for the upcoming season. You know, one day I want to get to a point in my life where $10,000 means nothing to me. Wouldn't that be great to scoff at somebody thinking 10 grand is a lot of money? A Las Vegas bettor at Caesars wagered $10,000 on the Sacramento Kings to win the NBA title at 750 to 1. The bet would win $7.5 million. But as we all know, the bet is not going to win. Imagine wasting $10,000 on one of the most dysfunctional teams in American sports. $10,000 on De'Andre Fox, Harrison Barnes, Domantas Sabonis, and Keegan Murray. $10,000 on a team coached by Mike Brown. Ugh. $10,000 on a franchise that hasn't won an NBA title since 1951. The Rochester Royals. Light that shit on fire. You don't have anything better to do with $10,000 than bet on the Kings? Ugh. Imagine having that much money. Must be nice. Must be nice. The White Sox are going to kill me. It's just over and over and over again. The definition of insanity is thinking things are going to happen and then you never get a different result, right? We're doing the same thing over and over and over again. My insanity is I still think this team has the talent to win the AL Central. But they have showed us nothing through the middle of July. Pretenders, right? Not contenders. Team has no heart. Fundamentals are a fucking joke. They can't hit the cutoff man. They don't catch fly balls. The triple play on the 4th of July still blows my mind. First and second, nobody out. Fly ball to the track, triple play. The first 8-5 triple play in the history of Major League Baseball. How is that possible? The clubhouse, reportedly a mess. The 78-year-old manager is a disaster, and ownership won't do anything about the aforementioned 78-year-old manager. I can't remember the last time I was this upset to be a White Sox fan. Obviously, I have positions on them to win the AL Central. You probably have positions on them to win the AL Central. They're not going to win it, which is unbelievable that they are this bad in a division that stinks. At time of taping here, the White Sox are 5 games back in the AL Central. And it feels like it could be a lot worse. That doesn't make me feel any better. It shouldn't make you feel any better. But I'm stuck on this team. I don't know how this happened. I don't know how we got here. Yes, there's plenty of baseball left to go. But this team has shown me nothing when it comes to stringing together long streaks. You need 6 out of 8, 8 out of 10, 10 out of 13. I don't know that they can do that. I'm not waving the white flag. We ride this shit to the rim. But what a maddening, maddening baseball team. And I'm still so sick. I'm looking at FanDuel, 2-1 to win the Central. Caesars, 2-10 to win the Central. And thinking to myself, you know, that's a really good number. Sickness. Here's something interesting for you. Wrote this up on Nessa, NessaBets.com. It's a strategy on the Orioles to win the World Series that could be very profitable. But let me start by saying you don't need them to win the World Series for you to make money. If you have $100 laying around, think about this. The Orioles are two games out of a wild card spot in the American League. And the franchise has nothing but talented young players on the way. Going into opening day, Baltimore number one farm system in Major League Baseball.
Well, so what?
Despite the Orioles playing better than anybody thought, win total was 62.5. The World Series odds are still insanely high. And a $100 bet at a couple American sports books wins $40,000 if they make a miraculous run to the title. But they only need to make the playoffs to make you money. First things first, shop around. 200-1 points bet, 200-1 super book, 200-1 win bet. Let's go higher. Circa, 225. MGM and Caesars, 250. FanDuel, 250. Higher. Bet Rivers, 300. DraftKings, 400. Fox Bet, 400. Why bet 100 to win 20 grand when the same 100 makes you 40 grand somewhere else? Always be shopping. But what you're doing is you're making a $100 bet to hedge off in the playoffs. If Baltimore stays hot down the stretch, they make a move or two, fix the roster, bolster the bullpen, and finish number six in the AL. There's a new playoff format this year. You don't face the Yankees or the Astros in the first round. In the new playoff format, if Baltimore is the final wild card team, they will face the worst division winner in a best of three, and that's likely Minnesota. So you have 100 to win 40 grand. The move at that point is to place a bet on the Twins to advance. Twin series. All three games in Minnesota, oddsmakers say it should be around minus 200. Twins can't be a bigger favorite than that because they're not that good. So you risk, what, 2,000 to win 1,000 on the Twins? Okay. If Minnesota bounces Baltimore, you pocket a quick 900, and that's it. You win the 1,000 from the Twin Series bet, lose the 100 on the Orioles. 900. Cha-ching. If Baltimore knocks out Minnesota, you roll that Oriole ticket forward. It's not worth $40,000 anymore, but it's worth $38,000. You proceed to hedge this ticket until the O's get eliminated or win the World Series. Obviously, the further the O's go, the more expensive it gets to bet the other side. But with a bankroll of $38,000 and three more rounds, how can you lose if you practice proper money management? It's impossible to lose if the Orioles make the playoffs. If you're getting 300, 400 to 1, obviously 400 to 1, go find a 400 to 1. Still available right now at DraftKings. And look, if you don't want to bet 100 because you have to risk thousands down the road, fine. Bet 50 or 25. The point is, if you have a team that is two games out of a playoff spot at 400 to 1, with the new format, this is a moneymaker. Houston's probably the two. Yankees are going to be the one. But those two teams get buys. The three plays the six. The four plays the five. So you roll in. If the Orioles get in, you roll into that first round. They'll be plus 175 or plus 185 against Minnesota or Chicago or Cleveland. It's a really interesting situation. And I get it. Look, if you have 100 to win 40 grand, you're going to have to hedge 2 grand on Minnesota. If it's Yankees and Orioles, you might have to risk 4,000 or 5,000. If that's too rich for your blood, I get it. It's a lot of money. Don't bet 100 then. Bet 50. But I did the math and this checks out. You are definitely in business off of one bet. Orioles miss the playoffs, you're down 100 bucks. But for that possibility and that entertainment and that roller coaster, I'm willing to throw down a Benjamin. I am. Tom Brady, popular player here in New England, even though he's been in Tampa for two seasons. Brady moves the dial here. People still fawn and obsess over Tom Brady. So I found five player props that are interesting involving Brady. 35.5 passing touchdowns, over under. Minus 110 each way. Last 2 years, Brady 43-40. But in his last 4 years with New England, 24, 29, 32, 28. So over, but under. Thing is, in Tampa, he's the offensive coordinator. He's scheming things up. He has full autonomy there, despite what the organizational chart says. He can do whatever he wants, especially inside the red zone. As long as he stays healthy, he's got a shot here to go over 35.5. So I don't want to really short this one. The next number is huge for a quarterback who will be 45 years old in the beginning of August. Passing yards, 4,650. He went over this number by 700 yards last year. Now, it's also worth mentioning he threw a career-high 719 passes, second most in NFL history. It's easy to think Brady has his sights set on Peyton Manning's record, 5,477, but I'm staying far away from this one. If he misses a game or two, he's not going over this. And I'm sorry, I have concerns when it comes to durability about a 45-year-old quarterback in the NFL. He can't play forever. He can't play at this level forever. Eventually, Father Time will take its toll. But I don't want to short that one either. Here's the one I love. Interceptions, 12.5. My favorite prop of this bunch. And I'm going under. Tom Brady hasn't thrown 13 picks since 2009. And he averages 9 a year over the career. Even with all the attempts the last 2 years, he got to 12 and 12 picks. And here's the most important thing. If he misses any time at all, a week, 2 weeks, they have a record of 14-2 or something. And Brady doesn't play week 17. He rolls an ankle, misses a game against Carolina or Atlanta, whatever. How's he going over 12.5? I have so many things working in my favor here. I think Brady's going to throw like 37 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. He's gotten more accurate over the last handful of years, and the offense is quick hitter shit. He's not throwing across the middle anymore. He doesn't throw into double coverage. I think this is a great bet. You can find under 12.5 picks at plus 100 if you shop around. And I really like that bet. The other two, these are exotics. Most passing yards, plus 650. No, I want more. Joe Burrow, 12-1. Kirk Cousins, 18-1. Better receivers. They're going to throw the ball more. And I think Burrow, 12-1. Cousins, 18-1 are very realistic. So I'm not betting Brady there. And then MVP. This one's interesting. 8-1. You shop around, you find 9, 10-1. He's near the front of the class. We know that. At most books, he trails only Josh Allen. Brady's won the award 3 times, 07, 10, 17. And the narrative is going to write itself if he dominates at age 45. I just don't know. I'm not there. I don't think he's going to throw for 5,000 yards and 45 touchdowns. I just don't. That guy cares about one thing, winning another Super Bowl. I don't think he's going to kill himself in the regular season this year because they ran out of gas last year. What's more important? Breaking regular season records or winning another ring? I think it's the latter. And I think he's going to miss more time than he has. So I'm under 12.5 picks on Tom Brady. Another wager that I love, and I hate how much I love this one. It's our guy, Kyle Pitts. His touchdown prop. Over under is 4.5 at minus 110 each way. According to NFL Savant, Pitts was targeted 16 times in the red zone last season. 16! One touchdown pass to show. But here's an idea of just how unlucky that was. I repeat, Pitts, 16 targets in the red zone, one touchdown. Compare that ratio to these players. These are targets, touchdowns inside the red zone. Mark Andrews, 20-9. 20 targets, 9 touchdowns. Hunter Henry, 18-9. Pat Freiermuth, 18-7. Austin Eckler, 17-7. Gabriel Davis, 16-6. Adam Thielen, 15-9. Kyle Pitts, 16-1. One of these things is not like the other. There has to be regression the right way with Pitts. No? And is Marcus Mariota that bad? I know he's not stupid. Here's an idea. Throw the ball to the best fucking player on the field. He's 6'6", 250. He's the only weapon on that team. Even if he's doubled or bracketed, you can get him the ball five times this year. Hell, run a receiver sweep with him. Do the pitch play, the Mahomes to Kelsey play. How does this guy not catch five touchdowns this year? If he plays in 17 games, 15, 16, 17, whatever, how does he not get more targets in the red zone and more touchdowns this year? I just gave you the numbers. 29, 18, 9, 18, 7, 17, 7, 16, 6, 15, 9, 16, 1. Figure that out, Atlanta. That's a bad football team this year, but he's their best player. And the other thing is prevent. Falcons, very low win total. Falcons might be the worst team in the NFL. What do you do when you're down? Throw the ball. What do defenses do when they're up 10? Prevent. They don't care. Games are almost over. Garbage time. Look at that Pitts over 4.5. I know he only caught one last year, but he was unlucky, and he is the guy now on that team. There's nobody else. Calvin Ridley, where's he at? Last thing. DraftKings posted U.S. presidential odds in Canada. Donald Trump Sr., 5-2. Ron DeSantis, 3-1. Joe Biden, 550. Kamala, 12. Mike Pence, 14. Nikki Haley, 25. Pete Buttigieg, 25. Gavin Newsom, that slimy fuck, 30. Michelle Obama, 35. The Rock, 40. Hillary, 40. Elizabeth Warren, 45-1. Other notables. Tucker Carlson, 50-1. Jeff Bezos, 65. AOC, 65. Bernie Sanders, 100. Andrew Yang, 100. Marco Rubio, 100. Candace Owens, 100. Paul Ryan, 150. Susan Rice, 200. Not getting political here. I remember talking about DeSantis last summer. Do you remember? The Florida governor was 12-1 to be the next president. 12-1. But you couldn't get down anywhere. Obviously, no betting on USA politics in the USA. Locals wouldn't give you anything. And if they did, they're not taking a big pop at 12-1. I was looking to bet a nickel, maybe a dime. Ladbrokes was dealing bets on this. Ladbrokes is a big book in the UK. But because of the very, very deadly virus, I couldn't get there. I don't know anybody in the UK. I know people travel there, but nobody was traveling during the summer of 2021. I have huge, huge FOMO that I don't have Ron DeSantis at 12-1. Does that make me a sicko? Probably. What a CLV trophy that would be. To have him for a nickel at 12 and now he's 3? I don't know who wins. In fact, I'm terrified that two of the three candidates are still in the mix. Trump 5-2, DeSantis 300, Biden 11-2. Oh boy. But I still can't believe that we couldn't get down on DeSantis. Some of you did. You sent me slips where you were able to get it down and your bookies took it, or you had somebody in the UK. Good for you. You got 12-1 on Ron DeSantis. You are in an incredible position. And I still think we should be able to bet on this in Las Vegas. Can you imagine how much money the books would write on this stuff? It's a 4-year cycle. And we don't have information on this. I have no idea who's going to be the president. I know it's probably never going to be regulated here. Well, I guess I shouldn't say never. But in the UK, you can bet on all kinds of stuff. Offshore markets, you could bet on this stuff, on politics. And these books make a killing. I mean, day of the election, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars. Easy. That's election day. turn the clock back from Election Day to the previous election for the presidency. How many bets would these books write from Election Day 2020 to Election Day 2024? Billions of dollars. People have an interest in this. People have an opinion on politics. We know that. They would bet on this. Ron DeSantis, 12-1. We hardly knew ye. Joining us on Chicken Dinner, he is the Annoyed Pit Boss. Follow on Twitter at Annoyed Pit Boss. The book is called Dealt. I have it in my hand. It's about working in the casino industry. And I'll tell you what, I flipped through this book. Too bad there's not more stories in here, Eric. I wish there was more you had to say.
Yeah, there's a couple there. Well, you can always follow my Twitter account, but I've already had requests from readers for volume number two. So I don't know how quickly that'll be, but I will try to get some more out there for everybody. But I appreciate you having me on, Sam. This is truly an honor.
So casino dealer, onto a pit boss, and you're still working in the industry. How do you get involved in something like this? When does this journey start for you?
Yeah, it started back in 2010. I had lost my job at a college marketing department. It was basically just looking for a job. And I had had a background just kind of playing poker, not really table games, but I was, you know, a poker player. And the local town, city, and that I lived in, a casino had opened, and I just saw they had interviews for dealing, and it was a dealing school that they hired us in, and we dealt cards in a warehouse with about the same 30, 40 people for 3 months. So that was an experience, but yeah, they had to hire so many local people as part of the thing to get the casino up in town. So yeah, I got hired from that, and it's been a roller coaster since.
Over a decade now in between the walls of a casino in the United States. When did you know that this was not your average job? Like, did it take minutes, days, weeks? How long did it take?
Not too long. I would say probably a week or two. I mean, we kind of knew going in, you know, this is going to be interesting. We're going to see some crazy stuff and, you know, dealing with people. But I'd say about a week or two in, you know, when you have your first person that either threw a drink on somebody or just F-bombing you up and down for like 10 minutes. And you're just like, wow, this is not like any other industry.
It's always your fault, though. No matter what happens at the table, it's your fault. If the player wins, they're supposed to win. If they lose, you are trying to cheat them. You work for the man. Your little buddy, the eye in the sky, is helping you out. It's a lose-lose situation sometimes to be a dealer.
It really is. We've heard it all. You know, you have the cards up your sleeve. The shuffler knows what card's coming out. The pedal underneath the roulette wheel. I've even heard, I don't know if you've heard this one, the craps radio wave that controls the dice. It can bring out a seven at any point. So I've heard it all. And yeah, everybody thinks you're cheating them when they're losing. But I mean, to be honest, I mean, dealing with the general public just sucks in general. And then imagine dealing with the general public when they're just losing hundreds and thousands of dollars. So like you said, there's no one for them to blame. They're not going to blame themselves. So we end up being the punching bag because we're the closest ones there.
We went to the boat a lot when we were 21 in Chicago. It's, of course, the Hammond Horseshoe right across the border from Chicago. So you take the Skyway down and you get off and you could play there. And it wasn't really that crowded late at night. Now, if you wanted to go to Vegas, you go to Vegas. But we were at the local casino a lot, the Hammond Horseshoe. And then in college, there was a joint right outside Iowa City. It's like 30 minutes away. And anytime we went down to visit the University of Iowa, we would go to this joint. And people would roll in, I'm telling you, $20, $50, $100. And there would always be that one guy that would turn 50 into 1,000. And I'd be staring at him like, what the fuck is the goal? Like how much more money do you want to make? And they didn't understand the reality of the situation. They have 20 times their money and are still like, nope, I'm going to keep going. It's like, you have to understand how this works.
Right. And sooner or later, the house is going to catch up and get you. And it's just, I mean, we have players that come in every day and they, you know, they're going to buy in for 5 to 1,000 and they never, ever leave with a profit. And they know it. Like I literally, the guy came up to me the other day and was, you know, hey, I'm up $4,000, you know, at this table, whatever this happened. And I'm like, yeah, good, great. Leave. Like actually leave with a profit. And he literally said to me, you know, oh, he's like, oh, you know, I can't do that. And he just goes on to the next craps table. And you're just like, what? Like, what? Where am I? Like, why can't you walk out the door with a profit? Like, maybe go spend that on something, invest it, put it to the savings account. I don't know. Buy yourself something. But don't bring it back here and just keep gambling. It's a vicious cycle. And it just, I mean, I see it every day. It just keeps happening.
Well, you work for the house, but you're also a human being. So I would imagine from time to time you like to see the player win. It's like you almost sometimes have to wish that you could keep like a spray bottle of bleach under your table so you could just spray people in the eyes when they're up big.
That's a great idea, actually. Yeah, get out of here. You want people to win in general. Until the person shows that they're an asshole or is an asshole to me or a dealer, then, yeah, I want them to win. And I have a lot of that I consider good friends now that come in and gamble a ton. And yeah, you want them to win. They're good people. They tip. They can't stay away, and they usually are losing it. So it's like you want people to win. You see it happening. But at the end of the day, yeah, it's like, what can you do? I the first year of me dealing, I used to talk to people all the time and be like, you know, you've tripled your money. Like, you need to get out of here. Like, this is a good day's work. Like, come out, you know, come back next week or whatever. And it just goes one in one ear, out the other. So after a while, and that's why you see it, there's a lot of turnover in the industry. A lot of dealers, it's just burn out quick. You just stop trying to give them common sense, basically, to get out of there, because they just don't listen.
You're the angel on one shoulder. Unfortunately, the devil's on the other, and the devil is usually louder, if you will.
Yep.
You mentioned the assholes at the table. Do you have a favorite story about somebody losing their freaking mind in the pit?
I mean, this isn't in the book, but I have dealt to a guy that ended up on 60 Minutes because he had a murder for hire going on.
What?
But yeah. So I used to deal to this guy at High Limit, and he just, you knew it 5 minutes in that he was not stable, let's say that. But he couldn't handle just losing a hand of blackjack. Now, he would buy in for probably like $5,000, and he wasn't there all the time. I think he was from out of town, but he would come in, and when he was there, maybe like once a month, he would gamble at High Limit and get a reserve table and all that. But he would lose his ever-living mind on just like, you know, he'd lose like six in a row, and then he'd win one, and then he'd lose like just a $200 hand. And he'd like flip out on you, smack the table, and he would just stare at you with these cold eyes. So I ended up, after dealing with him for, you know, years on and off, I went up to a different casino, and that's when I became a pit boss. And then I ended up coming back to the casino that I was a dealer at as the pit boss. I came back and I was asking my shift manager, hey, whatever happened to that whack job, you know, whatever. And he goes, oh, that nutso. He goes, didn't you see a 60 Minutes? And I'm like, no. Yeah, he was on 60 Minutes. For, I don't know, he moved down south and ended up getting a girlfriend, and they decided, hey, it'd be a good idea to knock off her husband and his ex-wife.
Wow.
And they ended up meeting with somebody at a restaurant. Turned out it was an FBI informant, and they kind of went down from there. So he's in jail now, I'm pretty sure for life, or most of, you know, his life anyway. But yeah, so that was, but you knew it then. Like, you had that, like, cold hair on the back of your neck feeling when he'd look at you and scream, what the fuck, man? And he could not handle the swings of blackjack. So imagine what the rest of his life was like.
From your table to a double homicide.
Exactly. Thankfully, no one got killed, but he got caught before that happened.
Well, that was his plan, though, right? I mean, that was
right.
The idea. The plan didn't exactly come to fruition, but that's where he wanted to go.
Exactly.
I imagine you hear all type of stuff. Well, I don't imagine. I know you hear all type of stuff. I want to know about the systems, the baccarat system, the roulette system. Everybody's got a system in the casino. Yep. They all think they can beat the house. Give me an example of something that maybe did work and something that didn't work. People just talking shit at the table. They have an idea how to bring home the pot.
Everybody has a theory. You know, obviously the Martingale system is just brutal, and people, it's one of the most popular, and, you know, I get it. If you don't hit a long streak, you're going to win here and there. You know, you're going to pick up some, you know, what are you doing? One unit, you know, on the table, basically a win, but that system ends up going bad quickly when you have, you know, seven losses in a row, which can happen on roulette, blackjack pretty quickly. And you end up chasing, you know, your bets up to $2,500 and you're chasing like a $20 bet. And it's like, what am I doing? You know, you only lost $20 in that first hand, but here you are with, you know, your whole bankroll in on a table and losing that. So, yeah, we hear that all the time. I mean, roulette's one. If somebody plays, you know, the first 12 and then they play 19 through 36 and they're, I just have to avoid the zeros in 13 through, you know, 18. And it's like, dude, like, let me bet the 13 through 18 because you know that's going to hit, or the zeros. And now they got triple zero roulette, which thankfully my casino doesn't yet. But yeah, it's like, you know, those systems are all predicated off of, especially the roulette, like, oh, I just have to avoid these numbers. And you know those numbers will hit. And it's just, yeah, none of it works. These systems, the iron cross on craps, and stuff, none of it works. It's just everybody, you know, and then when I tweet about it, people come back at me like, I think it's the people that are betting the systems. They come back at me like all fired up, like, well, how is that any, you know, the system's not any different from somebody just playing the game. And you're like, I guess not. Yeah, it's all bad. Like, there's a house edge no matter what. But yeah, it's just, it's the people that they think these systems are like foolproof.
The best Baccarat system in your book.
Oh, now that one, yes. No, you wanted to bring up that one. That one was the best one ever. You read that story. Yeah, that one, which that guy, if you read the story, Pappy, didn't technically do anything wrong. Now, you could say he deceived the couple as basically, you know, just to kind of give our listeners here a recap. He basically talked this young couple that had never, I don't think, played a table game in their life, let alone Baccarat. They, to, you know, let him sit at the table with him. He will give them advice on what to bet. Because, you know, he's got the scorecard out. You got to keep scoring. It's like baseball over there on Bach. They got their pencils, colored pencils. They're marking the banker, the player, banker. So he told them what to bet. They listened to him. And on the hands that they won, they were giving him half the bet as like a tip, you know. So he was slowly collecting half of every winning. Well, they had losses in there too. So their buy-in just slowly dwindled. And then you look over and Pappy's got a pocket full of, you know, red sticking out, and then he disappeared. So that was the best Baccarat system that worked. But yeah, any of the other systems that gamblers try that think, oh, this is foolproof, it's just, they don't work.
Yeah, the only system that wins is the one where you get paid on your wins but you don't have to pay your losses. But that's not really a thing that most people can swindle.
How about that?
And then the best is he's gone. They go, where is he? He's gone. They think he's in the bathroom and he's gone.
He's out the door. And I think, you know, whether his name was Pappy or if he just threw that out there, the fact, because we thought it was her grandfather. We thought it was like her grandfather, because she came over to us and asked if his, cool, could Pappy, you know, come sit at the table with us? And she pointed to him. He was like sitting on a slot machine. And I'll never forget that. Like, I thought it was her grandfather for like the whole time they were at the table until he took off. And she asked me, why do we have to give him our bet half the time? I was like, are you serious? Like, I thought I was being punked. I was like, no, you don't. No, what are you talking about? You don't have to do that. Did he say that? Oh my God. Yeah. And they figured it out. But yeah, I think he used Pappy to make it seem like he was like related to them. Like that was their grandfather or something. Like truly unbelievable.
He's the ultimate hustler.
I'm like curious. I want to like talk to him and find out what other ones he's tried.
You'll never fucking find that guy again. Are you crazy?
I know. I'm hoping he picks up my book. Maybe could contact me.
Did you become a smarter gambler based on your time?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I stay away from most of the table games and slots for sure. But you know, it's a curse because you know the game so well. You see, you know, some people do win. You see people win big amounts throughout the day, throughout your shift, and you think, well, gee, I could drive a half hour and go to the casino down the road and try to do this too. So it's a curse because you see it, but then you see the bad too. So to me, I always was a poker player. I still am, you know, I prefer poker over any other, you know, table game in the casino. Slots, forget about it. I'll rarely sit slots. But table games, I try to stay away unless I'm in Vegas for, you know, a trip. I'll play craps with buddies or blackjack or whatnot. But for the most part, poker, sports betting is where I try to stay. So I think that keeps me grounded on that effect. But I've seen coworkers just go the complete other direction. I wrote about it in one of the chapters. I mean, pit bosses and dealers are just as worst bad gamblers and degenerates as our players. I've had coworkers ask me, hey, can I borrow $40 till payday? And you're like, what do you need $40? Like it's a week from payday. Like that's going to hold you over. Where's your money going? Like I know what you make. And then I come to find out that they went to the casino the night they got paid and blew it all on a slot machine. That's like was their regular a habit, I guess. Yeah. Crazy. So it can go either way. Thankfully, you know, I think my family keeps me grounded too, but thankfully it keeps me out of that casino. And the other thing too is once you're there every day, I mean, Sammy, it's like a job. Like it just, it becomes a grind. You get burned out. You know, I just watch somebody gamble for 10 hours a day. I watch Let It Ride or Blackjack. It's like watching paint dry after so long. It's like, I don't want to go and deal with these mopes and the degenerates at another casino where I'm sitting there losing money. So it just, it kind of turns me off from that. So that has helped, at least for me, being in the industry.
Before we talk about the NFL futures that you love or bets you're going to make, I have to ask you about the best hot streak you've ever seen in the pit.
Yeah, I mean, it's – so I would say craps is like – unlike. I don't know if you're a craps player, Sammy, but craps is like any – like nothing other. Blackjack, you can have runs, and I've seen people have runs, not really like 30 in a row in blackjack because that's very rare and you know, not likely to happen. So blackjack, I've seen people, though, just win shoe after shoe after shoe for like an entire shift. You know, that not like massive amounts, but they're just winning every shoe. And after every shoe, they're, you know, their bankroll's higher. The money in front of them's higher. The chips keep going up. So I've seen that where it's just like a good table. Now people will say, well, maybe they were counting. Well, maybe they were, but, you know, so it's like, you know, then they come in the other, you know, two more days and it doesn't, and they goes downhill. So I've seen runs for days, like a day, a whole shift where they'll just consistently win on that table. But as far as like a hot streak, craps, I think sit and box was the number was one time we saw. I mean, I think we've had rolls. You get your half hour rolls. We had like a 2 hour roll one time. And I mean, these players couldn't lose money. Hard ways were hitting. Horn high yos were hitting. Anything they were placing on was winning. And it was just, they were hitting points, hitting multiple points, hitting numbers. And it was just an incredible roll. We got, I think we got like three fills on the table of more chips. And during this roll, I think they wanted to change dice in the middle of it, probably get us off because, you know, the casino starts thinking, oh, the crew's in on it, this and that. So, I mean, I've seen whole crews on craps get fired and stuff for not catching sliding dice and things like that, and actually maybe paying out losers that were really winning and stuff like that, or paying out additional when there actually was cheating going on. But just, yeah, a 2 hour roll, it was just incredible. So, I mean, I wanted to throw my, get my tie off and go on the other side and throw some money down. Like they couldn't lose.
A 2 hour roll.
And it wasn't even like I have high, we have high rollers that come in that would have won. I mean, like 50,000-70,000 and more on a roll like that. This table, it was just like early in the morning. It was just kind of casual gamblers. You hate to see it. They were, we finally got them to press, but they weren't really even pressing at first. So they didn't win. Like everybody won a lot, but nobody won like, you know, a massive amount of money where you're like, that's life changing money. But people were walking away. I mean, pretty much everybody won at least like 5-10 grand. Like it was nuts. So that was probably the hottest streak that that I've seen on craps. The other tables, you get a hot shoe or two, but like I said, it's just, it's tough to keep that up in games like roulette or blackjack because the house edge is just so bad.
Well, yeah, especially if it's, you know, you get a couple of points, like a 4 or a 10, and then people are cleaning up on the 6 and the 8, and it just, it never ends. Nobody can hit a 7. They're just hitting every point on the board.
Yep. And then when it gets to the come out roll, they were hitting 7s like no tomorrow. And then, yeah, then they get a number and suddenly 7, you know, there's no 7 around. So, I mean, it's fun to watch when that happens because obviously the table's having a good time. They're tipping. It's fun. Everybody's – I mean, that's like the true, you know, gambling experience. Like I would say a hot craps table is unlike anything else in the industry. So that was just like – I mean, everything. The drinks were – everything was ideal on that. So, like I said, I wanted to just quit and – roll on the other side of the table and start gambling. Call my cousin. I don't know. Get in here.
All right, let's talk about the NFL. Wrap this bad boy up here. You play your fair share of football. Sounds like you like the futures market. Are you more win totals, more divisional markets? Do you play the Super Bowl market? How do you shake down what you're playing in the NFL?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, as far as, yeah, I'm definitely a future bet. Over-unders and Super Bowl are kind of the two that I'll hit. I've been kind of diving into the award market lately, but, yeah, I'm not really up to on that. But definitely over-unders, Super Bowl, And then I'm kind of like a, during the season, more of like, it's fade the public, under bettors and stuff like that. And I'll tell you this, Sammy, working at the casino, here's another perk. You come in contact with a ton of sports gamblers, obviously. And a lot of them are what I like to call mooches, who are just people that bet the favorite or bet the big favorite. Who, there's no way that team can lose. There's no way they're going to lose, and they're definitely going to cover that game. I hear that all the time during football season. So when I forget what Super Bowl number it was, but when it was Seattle and Denver, it was all about Denver's offense. I heard that for two freaking weeks at the casino. There's no way Seattle's defense is going to stop this Denver offense. There's no way. And you're just like, I got to bet Seattle. You know, it's like 80% of the money or whatever was on Denver. So it was just the huge, you know, it just, to me, it seems so obvious. But that's all I heard for 2 weeks. So a lot of that, if I start hearing a team a lot throughout the week, I'm usually looking to bet the other side. But that helps a big time, because just fading degenerate gamblers is a good strategy, I found out.
43-8 that Super Bowl, Seattle, never in doubt. And that was also yep. The big double down chase at the half when everybody came back. It was 22-0 at half. And I want to say Denver was laying 6 in the second half, and Percy Harvin took the kickback.
It was like a 2-hour, you know, 3-hour celebration. It was so much fun to watch. But stuff like that, when you just have everybody pumping one. And I had a coworker. And he was like, "You're nuts. There's no way they're going to slow this Broncos offense down." And I was like, "Dude, it's one game." And see, you know what? Like, obviously, Seattle had a good defense, and they proved it that game. But it was like, dude, anything can happen in one game. But yeah, everybody was just on Denver. I had to go the other way and swerve.
So, who do you like then, win total wise, and then maybe a Super Bowl bet for us?
Yeah, so a couple, and this is kind of a trend here. So I'm off the Packers. I think there's an opportunity for the Vikings in this division. Obviously, the division's bad, but I like the Packers under. I think it's like 10.5, 11. You can shop around, but I like the under there. I also, in the same breath there, I like the Vikings over, and also the Steelers. So I'm a Steelers fan. I've gone, you know, I think the team's going to be bad every year, but I think it's to the point now where Tomlin has just convinced me, like, they're going to be at 500 every year, no matter what, even with Trubisky or Pickett or whoever's going to play quarterback for them. It looks like they're just always going to play. You know, the defense should be pretty good. The running game's good. They should be all right there. So I'm going to go over on the Steelers. I think it's at 7.5. So that's my 2 or 3 there. But Super Bowl, I think the 2 or 3 for me, Chargers, I was high on them last year too, and they just I don't know what happened with them last year, but I like the Chargers like around 16-1. The Colts are another one. We'll see what Matt Ryan. I like the Colts just keep recycling like these old quarterbacks. I guess Wentz wasn't old, but these recycled quarterbacks, Rivers, Wentz, and now Matt Ryan. But hopefully Matt Ryan still got another run in him. But you know, he's been to the Super Bowl. They have the coach, they have the defense, they have a running game, I hope. So I like the Colts this year. And then this is my long shot. It's the Vikings at 40-1. So I'm like all in on that. Like going from the incompetent Mike Zimmer to anybody, I think it's a big step up. Plus they played like a ton of one-score games last year, lost a ton of them. So I kind of like that, the fact that maybe just the variance with the new coach and got away from god-awful Zimmer will get them some more wins. Plus the division's so bad. I think the Packers are due for a down year. Who's Rodgers throwing to? So I like the Vikings there at 40-1. Obviously it's a long shot. They'll probably, you know, it's a rookie coach, but still like, I like the move from Zimmer. So that's my main long shot there.
He's Eric Sherwood. You can follow on Twitter at Annoyed Pit Boss. The book Dealt, Stories from My Life on the Felt. Here's what it covers: comical characters, depressing degenerates, ridiculous betting systems, huge wins, and quicker losses. The man has seen a lot, both in the pit and on the floor. There's a lot to digest here in this book from Eric Sherwood. We appreciate your time on Chicken Dinner, and good luck with the book, man.
I appreciate it, Sammy. Thanks so much for having me on.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Eric Sherwood, the Annoyed Pit Boss, for hopping on the show. Record check, nothing has changed. No new picks, no new results, still up a little bit of scratch. Half a unit, plus 0.5. But don't worry, football picks will be coming before you know it. There are some teams I love on the win total side of things, and there are some bets I will be making
in the exotic markets, player props, team totals, things like that. So we will get the football soon enough. And guess what happens in 2 months? Guess who's back? Our guy, the bartender. He will be here champing at the bit to make some square football picks. 35-50 all time against the spread on our Twitter feed at ChickenXDinner. Can't wait for that. Coming up, we'll talk to Sean Green from the Sports Gambling Podcast. Cash some tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you next time right here on Chicken Dinner.
Brother told me so, you'd be the greatest man alive.